Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey, listeners, you've got Mark here from the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today, my friend Kel Jensen is back on the show to talk about how we lose value in negotiations by not negotiating how we're going to negotiate before the negotiation. To say that 10 times fast. It was a very interesting discussion. Kel is sort of a radical when it comes to bringing new ideas into negotiation. He's very much a believer in trust and openness and how to have an honest negotiation. Several books that he's written are focused specifically on that. Always an interesting discussion with him on his perspectives of how negotiation should or should not be completed. I think you're going to really, really enjoy this. I encourage you to reach out to him and also reach out to me if you have any feedback. Looking forward to it. Hi, Kelt. How are you?
Good. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming back on, man. It's always a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you. Well, likewise.
Awesome. I'm really excited about the conversation today because I think we're going to get into a really good talk about value and how we lose value in negotiation. Before we do that, for the listeners who don't know about you, could you please give us a bit of background as to who you are and what you do and why you're stuck in Arizona at 110 degrees right now?
The last one is a very good question. Well, I'll make it short. Very briefly, I have made a million mistakes within negotiation. And the reason for that is originally I'm from the tech industry back in Scandinavia and started in Toshiba, been working at IBM, and ended my career in that line of business being the chief executive officer of a public company in Stockholm. And that was in the late 90s. And I thought at that point that, you know, when you're heading a company with thousands of employees and a huge revenue, you must be an outstanding negotiator. And then I met my former partner, who's unfortunately is not among us anymore. And he came to me, and in less than an hour, he moved me from unconsciously incompetent to consciously incompetent. And that was a terrible move, because suddenly you realize that, hey, you're not as good at something that you thought you would be. So that actually made me jump into the advisory role and training role that I am in today. That means that obviously I'm working within negotiation-related behavioral economics topics and trusts. And I am an associate professor at Thunderbird School of Global Management at ASU here in Arizona, the U.S. I am the author of 24 books, and I'm doing a lot of keynote speaking globally. So that was the short version of what I'm doing and why I'm in Arizona at 110 degrees Fahrenheit.
And I just looked up the centigrade conversion to that. And that for those of you that are listening that are thinking, what's 110 in Fahrenheit? It's 43 degrees Celsius. That's insane.
Yeah.
That is so hot. All right, let's get into it. One of the things we've been discussing and one of the things that you mentioned is you claim that there's the current negotiation training advice in the market is really just trying to make the horse carriage faster instead of inventing the car, so to speak. What do you actually mean by that?
Yeah. Obviously, it's a little bit of a provoking comment, but I'm serious about it. And what I mean by that is I see so many trainers out there in the world today that basically just try to pass an advice on how to better manipulate or how to outmaneuver your counterpart. So they're basically just giving tools to be better at the current climate in negotiations. So that's why I'm saying they're basically just trying to improve the horse and the carriage to be a bit faster. And what I'm really trying to do, together with other people, by the way, that is doing the same thing as I am, is actually trying to say, hey, couldn't we negotiate in a better or different way? The way we've been negotiating since the Middle Ages is basically the same way we're doing it today. And that is what I'm sure most of your listeners will know, Mark, called the zero sum. So, you know, I will win at your expense or you will win at my expense. So there's not a lot of value thinking in a lot of the training that is being done out there. It's basically just a question about how can you win and how can you win even more and how can you win quicker and at some time and at some point at the expense of the counterpart.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you. I think the value conversation often gets missed in negotiation, especially for those people who maybe aren't familiar with negotiation sort of on a day-to-day basis. But there even are people now today who believe, as you said in your earlier comment, that they are great negotiators. They're unconsciously incompetent. And they get to a point where they suddenly realize that they're not as great as they thought they were, which is really, I mean, it's a humbling position to be in, but it's also really important that a lot of people get to that point. How can we, as negotiation professionals, if we're working internally within our businesses and we're trying to create alignment and we're working with business partners that maybe are unconsciously incompetent when it comes to negotiation, how can we open that up? Like, how did your old partner and friend or mentor sort of open that conversation up for you in a way that maybe wasn't too demeaning? Or how do we show someone that there's work to be done?
That's actually a great question, because this is something that most of us will encounter all the time. And sometimes we might even be the one that are not very good at what we think we're good at, right? Mm-hmm. I usually compare it to playing tennis. I don't know if you're playing tennis, Mark. I'm trying once in a while to play tennis, and I'm not that good at it. But what I've actually realized is that if I'm playing tennis with somebody that is actually worse than me, I get so frustrated, because it's annoying playing a game with somebody that doesn't have a clue on how to play it. So I'm always losing to somebody that is worse at playing tennis than I am. But on the other hand, if I'm playing tennis with somebody that is way better than me, and that happens most of the time, by the way, Mark, I'm actually enjoying the game, because I can look at my counterpart and just enjoy how good they are at it. And the exact same thing I've experienced happens in real life negotiations. When you're sitting across the table from somebody who is qualified and professional, you can enjoy the game, because that person can actually help you improve your negotiations as well, and can help moving that negotiation forward. The worst thing I can ever experience is when I'm sitting with a client, and across the table from us, we have somebody sitting that have no clue what negotiation is all about. That is a nightmare, because you pointed it absolutely perfectly at how do we actually help that person without being perceived as arrogant, you know, and we have to be very careful about that. And what I'm often doing, and most of the time it's actually working out, there's a few times when it kind of blew up in my face, but what we're trying to do is actually have a negotiation before the negotiation where the only purpose is actually to discuss what are we going to do at the negotiation. Because the problem is, Mark, that even though you are qualified, and let's just assume that we have two parties that both are qualified, even though both of them are qualified in the art of negotiation, they may not perceive negotiation the same way. You know, United yeah. Nations has never declared a rule on how we should negotiate, right? So
that's right.
You may be a very qualified negotiator, Mark, and you might even be an expert, but you could be meeting somebody else who is equally as good as you, but they believe that negotiating is like playing chess, and you may see negotiation like playing hockey, right? So we have to agree on how we actually going to negotiation. So that's one way around it, to define the rules of the game.
So basically, we're negotiating how to negotiate before we start our negotiation.
Absolutely. When I'm working with clients, I very often recommend that we basically have a meeting prior to the negotiation where we basically just sitting there discussing the content of next week's negotiation. What variables are we going to discuss? Are we going to be open? What do we do if trust level is being dropped? Who's opening up the first? What happens to value that we identify? How are we going to split that and so on and so forth? There's a number of points that we have to go through before we actually start negotiating.
Yeah, so important, because otherwise, how do you how do you manage expectations, especially if you're negotiating from different perspectives? If someone is typically coming in with a zero-sum mindset and you're looking for sort of an insight, integrative-based negotiation, and you're really trying to drive for more interest, then you're going to be fighting two different battles. Like, it's just not, it's not going to work.
But you're absolutely right, Mark. And the sad thing is that that happens quite often, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there who want to do differently than zero sum, and they are trying to get into partnership or collaborations, or as I call it, smartnership, but they end up facing a counterpart that don't know anything but zero sum. And unfortunately, the sad news is that if you're trying to create value, if you are open and the counterpart is playing zero sum, unfortunately, you're going to lose. So you have to be very aware of that, obviously. What game is it the counterpart is playing?
And now you've coined the term smartnership. What does that mean?
Smartnership is a strategy above partnership. And the reason I coined the phrase smartnership is because I've met so many people saying, oh, we're in partnership with our counterpart. And, you know, when I heard that sufficient amount of times, I actually starting to study what is it they mean by partnership. And I found so many organizations claiming they're in partnership with somebody else. And really, end of the day, they were basically just in a long-term zero sum. So there's nothing wrong with the word partnership, but partnership is something different than both zero sum and smartnership. Smartnership means that we look for the added value. And the added value, and we have coined that phrase as well, we call that negotiation economics. And that's really a very simple thing that is just all about finding the difference between your cost and my values. It's that simple.
Yeah, I love that you've mentioned long-term zero-sum agreements, because I think a lot of people confuse, you know, a long-term, let's say just a 3-year or 5-year term agreement with, you know, something that's interest-based and, you know, everyone's winning, but all they're really doing every single year is trying to take value from that agreement instead of trying to build value from that agreement. Oh, and what ends up happening is it ends up being that long-term zero-sum type of relationship, and it's not as you say a smartnership.
I'm sure, Mark, you have experienced the same thing. You meet professional procurement departments that are working with the vendor for years and years and years, and what happened every year is they invite the vendor in, and then they open the meeting by saying, "Welcome back. We're very happy with the relationship, but once again, you have to reduce your prices by 3%." Well, there you go.
I have been delivering that specific phrase for many years, many years. You actually bring up an important point, though, because you say that sometimes up to 42 or 43% of the value in negotiation are lost. Mm-hmm. How is that even possible? How is it that we lose up to 40% of the value in a negotiation? This one is for my procurement listeners. Listen up. I want to invite you to ProcureCon Indirect West this September 16th through 18th at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback Inn Resort and Spa in Scottsdale, Arizona. Procurement listeners can save 25% off the current price with Negotiations Ninja special code PIW19N. N. I'm going to repeat that. That's PIW19NN. ProcureCon Indirect West provides you with the critical strategies that you need to prepare for the future of procurement. With an agenda 100% focused on your biggest challenges and opportunities, you'll attend more than 40 interactive sessions led by 80-plus inspiring speakers who are transforming the procurement function at some of the world's largest companies, all while meeting over 300 of your peers who are excited to benchmark, talk shop, and have some fun. Whether you're a rising star or a CPO, a large or a small company spend, ProcureCon has content and speakers to ensure your long-term sourcing success. Go to ProcureConWest.com to learn more and register with that code PIW19NN to get 25% off your ticket. I'll see you there. And now, back to your show.
It sounds crazy, doesn't it? But it's actually a fact. Very simply, one of the first thing I want to mention about that is that typically I see that we negotiate on too few variables. In even smaller negotiations, we may only be negotiating price, delivery time, warranty, and right of return, and who may carry the load of the warehouse and stuff like that. You know, we're down to 3, 4, 5 variables. But in reality, we might have 15 or 20 or 25 variables that might be relevant for the same negotiation. So one of my first advices to a lot of clients is sit down and even sit down with your counterpart and do a creative brainstorming, trying to identify what variables could we include in our negotiation besides the one we've been working on for years. That's step one. Step two is then identifying your cost and value on each variable. And if you are in a true partnership, you have to be willing to share that cost and value with your counterpart if, and this is important, if the counterpart is willing to do the same. Now, let's say, Mark, just to keep this very simple, that you and I are talking about terms of payment. I actually find it incredibly stupid talking about terms of payment before we know each other's cost and value. Let's say that your cost of money is 3% and my cost of money is 6%. Well, if that is the case, obviously I shouldn't finance the deal. You should, because you have a lower cost of money, right? So if you are the buyer and I'm the supplier, you should, in theory, just looking at it from a mathematical point of view, be paying me up front. And by paying me up front, I might be willing and able to give you a price reduction of, let's say, up to 5%, because I had a cost of 6% and you had a cost of 3%. Now, the difference between the 3% and the 6% is what we call necroeconomics. And if you start looking for that in every single variable, that is how you end up of the potential up to 42% of the values. And what is even more interesting, Mark, is that we have identified that 66% of all negotiations are not looking for necroeconomics. So that means that 66% of the negotiations out there are not utilizing any of the 42%, and the remaining ones that are working with some kind of value creation are not finding all of them. So there's a tremendous amount of value out there that's just being left on the table.
Do you think that's a result of people just not being comfortable with the math, or they just don't actually even think about it?
All of the above, plus one more important thing, trust. Because if we don't trust each other, we're not going to share information, are we? I mean, you're not going to give me your cost of values. I'm not going to give you my cost of values either. So you are right about the two things you mentioned. One of them is that people are not aware of this opportunity. Two, they're negotiating in zero sum because they don't know any other way to do it. And thirdly, they're afraid of openness. If they feel if I open too much, I'm going to get you know, be abused. The counterpart is going to take away the whole pie and I'm not getting any of it. So these are the main reasons why it is so hard and difficult to move people out of that of that typical traditional position.
Super interesting. I love that. And one of the things that you say is quite provocatory is that getting to yes was a failure, an iconic changing, like life-changing book for a lot of people. Published in the 90s by Urien Fischer. You say it was a failure.
Yeah.
Please expand on that. What do you mean by that?
Well, the interesting thing is this is without any doubt the best-selling book on negotiation ever. It has been selling 2-digit million copies worldwide. It is still selling, and it is acknowledged as one of the most important books in negotiation. And you know what, just to be honest for a second, I enjoyed the book for several reasons. I enjoyed it because it was one of the first books out there. It's talking about value creation. It's the first one that actually tried and put a frame on negotiation. So credit to that. The problem is nobody's really using it. I am with so many people and clients that when I look at the bookshelf, Getting to Yes is up there. And they are still working in absolutely zero sum. They don't understand anything but zero sum. They don't understand value creation. They don't understand any of the rules that have been described in that book. And what is so interesting is that the PON project at Harvard is basically trying to advise people to get away from zero sum, trying to advise them to create value, trying to do a lot of the stuff that is so opposite zero sum. But people seem to have read the book and do nothing of what's in the book. So that's why I call it a failure, because the book itself is good, but it didn't seem to change the mindset of anybody. So it's like the surgeon during, you know, being asked how did the operation go, and he said it was a wonderful operation, but the patient died, right? You know, it's a wonderful book, but it didn't really seem to change a lot out there.
So how do we change that mindset then?
It is exactly what you just said. It is a mindset that needs to be changed. We don't need toolboxes with more tools on how to improve our negotiation. And that's just getting back to your original question. We have so many trainers out there that are basically just offering tools in the toolbox on how to improve your negotiation and how to get your car at a better price, or how to get a better price when you're selling something, you know, tons of tools like that. But it is really a change of mindset. We have to change the mindset on what we believe negotiation should be or could be. Because if we just keep adding tools to improve zero sum, me winning at the expense of you, we're not getting anywhere. We're still negotiating as we did in 1700, and we're not really improving that area. We're not moving forward. We're not creating value. And we should really think about negotiation this way. If you and I, Mark, were negotiating, I would step into a negotiation and open someone like this saying, Mark, I'm here today to help you reduce your costs, reduce your liabilities, and improve your profit. That's the reason I'm here. Would you be interested, Mark, in me helping you do that? I'm pretty sure, Mark, that you might be a little suspicious and surprised, but I'm sure you would say, sure, yes, I would love that. And then I would ask you the following question that we, and Mark, I see your role today is helping me reducing my costs, reducing my risk, and improving my profit. So we're really here today to help each other being more successful. I'm not here to steal anything from you, and you're not here to steal anything from you. That's a real change of mindset, and that's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it really gets down to what you mentioned in our first interview when it comes to trust in the negotiation and building that trust at the beginning, doesn't it?
It does. And I actually meet a lot of people who are saying, well, that's not possible. You know, you can't do that because the counterpart will just take advantage of you and take all the value created on the table. And it requires a lot of time to build up that relationship and that trust. And that is actually not true. You can do it very quickly if you have the foundation in order. That means if you have negotiated on how to negotiate, if you have defined a strategy with your counterpart, if you have a focus on trust and openness, if you focus on necroeconomics, and if you actually have agreed on rules of the game, that means how we're going to conduct this whole negotiation. And obviously, it's not going to work every single time. I mean, I'm not naive, Mark. I don't believe that every single negotiation in the world should be and could be transferred from zero sum into smartnership. Absolutely not. Our studies actually shows that up to 40% of the negotiations in the world will stay in zero sum or even partnership for a lot of different reasons. But if we could move just, let's say, 50 or 60% into smartnership, my God, we would create so much value, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah. I wonder how, it seems like a big lift, Kelp. Like it seems like what you're proposing is to change, like almost like a cultural mindset. What do we have to do to start doing that? Because, I mean, being able to set the rules at the beginning of the negotiation is really, really important. I totally believe in that. How do we know that someone's not lying to us when they do that? Or how do we know that they'll just ignore the rules?
Great question, Mark. And really, we don't. You know, if people want to cheat, they can cheat, but they will only do it once. I actually have a client who has a great quote that I have to share with you, and that is, he's saying, I don't care if my counterpart cheats me. I just don't want to know. And I really think that's a wonderful quote. And what is really important, though, to understand, Mark, is that it's better working in smartnership, creating the additional value, and then being cheated of the majority of that value than working in zero sum. So just by moving from zero sum into value creation and then being cheated is actually superior to work in zero sum. So I would
because you're still getting more value is what you're suggesting.
Exactly. You're still getting more value. And you know, when I'm working with sales people, you know, a lot of salespeople step into negotiation and then they have to reduce the price to give a discount. And I'm usually telling them, you know, giving a discount is something that should be illegal by law. Because when you give a discount, reduce your price, that is going to hit your bottom directly, right? It's just, you know, 2% will cost you 2%, but give the counterpart 2% benefit. That is zero sum. What if you could create value for, let's say, 5% or 7% or 10%, and you only get to keep 1% or 2% yourself, and you have to give 8% to the procurement side, you're still creating value. You're not giving any discount because the benefit you're giving to the counterpart is coming from necroeconomics, so it's not going to hit your bottom line. So who cares that you're not going to get the majority of the value created because you are still getting out of that negotiation better than if you were in zero sum?
Fantastic. Super interesting. Kelt, I would love it if you could share with the listeners where they could follow you online and where they could buy your books, Honest Negotiation and The Trust Factor.
Well, the books is available in a lot of bookstores and obviously always on Amazon and all other online bookstores. My website is pretty easy. That's keltjensen.com. So it's just my name, first and last name. And then we have an online training program called smartnershipnegotiation.com where we can offer the training within smartnership negotiation and the different methods. And then it's actually a master program, 90 hours, with a lot of interactivity, videos, and stuff like that. And then obviously if people are interested or have questions, they are just very welcome to reach out to me.
Awesome. Well, I always love having you on the show, man. Always an interesting conversation. I love your outlook on negotiation. I think it's pretty radical, actually, and I think it's something that people need to pay attention to. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Hey, friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.